Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, the Senate's Committee on the Economy. Today is March 1st, 2018, and it's 1:34. I'd like to welcome Senator Gardner. Welcome.
Thank you.
Senator Meyer, welcome.
Thank you.
And Senator Machicki, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Stevens is excused. I'd also like to thank our recording secretary, Carrie, thank you, and the LIO operator, Ben, for being here to make it possible for us to track what we're doing. So today we are hearing for the first time one bill. It's Senate Bill 110 related to tourism marketing. And before we get started, I'm gonna make introductory remarks, and then my aide, Natasha McClanahan, will walk us through the sectional. Following that, we're going to immediately have Sarah Leonard, the president and CEO of Alaska Travel Industry Association, John Lambeth, who's the founder and president of Civitas, who's online, and also Colleen Stevens, who's here. She's the chair of the Alaska Tourism Marketing Board. So you will come up, and then we'll have John online, and each of you will be presenting for a few minutes before we open it up for questions. There won't be any public testimony today. We're just going to be hearing the bill and getting it its first hearing. And so for that, before we get going, I'd like Senator Meyer to move the committee substitute in before the committee.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move CS for Senate Bill 110, Labor and Commerce, version R Romeo, before the committee as the working draft.
Okay. Is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, Bill 110, version Romeo, is before the committee as the working draft. This is a Senate Labor and Commerce Committee bill, and I'm really proud to have introduced it. It relates to the tourism industry in Alaska, which is just a standout industry for our economy. The story behind this bill is one that I just wanted to briefly go over. It will establish a mechanism for the state of Alaska to partner with the private tourism industry in support of tourism destination marketing. So the brand marketing that we have in Alaska is to attract visitors here, and it's important as we compete with other long-haul destinations in the world for those visitor dollars. The tourism marketing program funding produces a substantial return for the state. And many Alaska citizens have given tourism is currently Alaska's second largest private sector employer. It employs more than 47,000 Alaskans. Research has shown that for every dollar spent on tourism marketing leads to $58 in visitor spending, $21 in income for state residents, and $2.84 in state and local revenue for every dollar that the state spends. So over the years, at least since I've been in the legislature, we have seen a gradual decline over the years in the tourism funding. It's significantly lower than it has been in the past. And so to address this issue, the legislature included intent language in the FY17 operating budget, asking the tourism industry to create a self-sustaining program funded by tourism business. Senate Bill 110 would allow the Department of Revenue to assist the Travel Alaska Board, create an Alaska Tourism Marketing Fund, and manage the capitalization and expenditures of the fund. The importance of this brand marketing can't be overstated. Tourism marketing program funding would generate significant economic impacts amounting to billions in spending over time. So Senate Bill 110 is an innovative way for private industry to partner with the public sector to address the current lack of funding for Alaska tourism marketing and keep Alaska forefront in this fast-paced competitive market. This public-private partnership will strengthen the tourism industry and provide a long-term solution for sustaining this crucial Alaska industry. And so I want to thank the members of the tourism industry for working together to forward this piece of legislation before the legislature. As I mentioned earlier, we put in our budget and the intent language that we asked the industry to come forward with a solution, and so they have. And today is the first time that the bill will be before the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, It's the committee substitute, and with that, I would like to welcome Natasha McClanahan. She's the committee aide. Welcome. And go ahead and walk us through the sectional.
All right. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Natasha McClanahan, staff to Senator Costello. Thank you for allowing me to be here today to testify. With your indulgence, I will walk through the sectional analysis of the CS for Senate Bill 110. Section 1 provides for an exception to the vehicle rental tax collection. Section 2 allows for entities subject to the vehicle rental tax to request all or a portion of the tax revenue they remit to the Department of Revenue be deposited into the Alaska Tourism Marketing Fund established in Section 5. Section 3 clarifies that vehicle rental tax revenues will be deposited into the general fund, with the department separately accounting for proceeds requested to be appropriated to the Alaska Tourism Marketing Fund. Section 4 allows for all vehicle rental tax proceeds requested for appropriation to the Alaska Tourism Marketing Fund, as outlined in Section 2, to be appropriated to the Alaska Tourism Marketing Fund. Section 5 extends for several pages and creates the Travel Alaska Board and mechanism for an Alaska Tourism Marketing Assessment within the Department of Revenue. Section 4425-200 on page 2 establishes the Travel Alaska Board and the Department of Revenue. Section 4425-205 on pages 2 to 3 creates a board structure of 21, 23, or 25 voting members appointed by the governor. Subsection B outlines that vacancies will be filled by the governor from a list of nominees forwarded by the board. If the governor rejects the list or a portion of the list, the board will submit another list for consideration. For vacancies based on an expiration of term, nominees forwarded to the governor will be determined via an election process of assessed tourism businesses established in Section 4425-275. Nominees for all other vacancies will be determined by the board approval. Subsection C ensures board representation by different regions, business sizes, and industry segments. Voting members must be both a representative of an assessed business or payer and a member of the statewide nonprofit marketing association. Subsection D allows the board to elect ex officio non-voting members. Subsection E provides the board shall annually elect a chair and vice chair. Section 4425-210 on page 3 defines board terms. Members serve staggered 3-year terms and can be reappointed. Section 4425-215 on page 3 provides that board members may be removed for cause. Section 4425-220 on page 3 defines quorum requirements. To initiate a vote among tourism businesses to levy, amend, or terminate an assessment, approval of the majority of all voting members is required. Other board actions require only the approval of a majority of voting members present. Subsection B permits the board to transact business electronically. Section 4425-225 on page 4 states board members receive no salary, per diem, or travel expenses. Section 4425-230 on page 4 asserts the board will meet at least twice a year. Meetings can also be called upon the written request of 5 members. Section 4425-235 on page 4, the board may request administrative support from the statewide nonprofit Tourism Marketing Association and work with the association to fulfill its duties. Subsection B directs the board to adopt definitions for tourism industry, tourism segment, and tourism business, and forward to the Department of Revenue for ratification. Should the department reject the definitions, the board may submit alternate definitions. Section 4425-240 on pages 4 through 5 describes the powers of the board and the adoption of policies related to the board, cooperation with public and private organizations, incurring expenses, appearing before government entities, acquiring and disposing of property, entering into agreements, and designating and removing ex officio members of the board. Section 4425-245 on pages 5 through 6 defines marketing duties of the board to promote travel and tourism in the state and promote segments participating in the assessment. The board must submit an annual report to the governor, legislature, and assessed tourism businesses. A marketing plan must also be prepared annually. Subsection 8 directs the board to identify segments of the tourism industry based on similar goods and services provided. Section 4425-250 on page 6 provides that any expenditures by the board must be consistent with the annual marketing plan. Section 4425-255 on pages 6 through 7 If the board votes to initiate the process of levying an assessment or amending an existing assessment rate, a vote by assessed businesses will be held following election procedures outlined in Section 4425-270. Subsection B clarifies that different segments of the tourism industry can be assessed at different rates. If an election is held and an assessment rate is approved, that assessment will be levied on the gross revenue of tourism businesses in that particular segment. Subsection C defines assessment rates available for consideration as 0.25, 0.5, 0.75, 1, 1.5, 1.25, 1.5, 1.75, or 2% of gross revenue. Subsection D requires the board to advertise and schedule public meetings for businesses potentially subject to a proposed assessment prior to an election. Section 4425-260 on pages 7 through 8 provides that a business subject to an assessment may pass the cost of the assessment on to its customers if the amount is disclosed in advance, a receipt is given, and the assessment is listed as a separate charge. Subsection B states that information given to the Board or Department of Revenue by an assessed tourism business is confidential with four exceptions. Subsection C clarifies that information obtained by the Board or Department of Revenue used to determine the assessment for a business is not public record. Subsection D allows the Department of Revenue to require assessed tourism businesses to maintain records verifying gross revenue, permit inspection of those records, and provide information upon request. Section 4425-265 on page 8, an assessment will terminate after 6 years or on the sunset date stated on the approved election ballot, whichever comes first. Subsection B provides that if the board votes to initiate the process of terminating an assessment, a vote by assessed businesses will be held following election procedures outlined in Section 4425-270. Section 4425-270 on pages 8 through 9 outlines the election procedures for an assessment vote. The board can hold an election after the Director of Elections approves the notice, ballot, registration, and voting procedures. Subsection B establishes meeting, notice, and ballot requirements of the board for any election to levy, amend, or terminate an assessment. Subsection C gives parameters for the Director of Elections to certify results. Subsection D allows ballots to be considered valid if signed by an officer or authorized representative of the tourism business. Section 4425-275 on pages 9 through 10 defines the weighted vote process used in elections for both assessments and board nominees. Votes will be weighted in proportion to the amount each business is estimated to pay under the proposed assessment in the next calendar year. When voting on an existing assessment, only the votes of businesses that pay under that assessment at the time of the election shall be counted. Actions must be approved by businesses representing a total of at least 50% of the weighted votes received. Section 4425-280 on page 10 outlines upon request by the Director of Elections, the Department of Revenue will determine the amount each assessed business is estimated to pay for any calendar year, including future years, for purposes of weighted votes. Section 4425-285 on page 10, assessed businesses will remit payment to the Department of Revenue within 30 days of the end of each calendar quarter. Within 60 days of the end of each calendar quarter, the Department will report to the Board the total amount of assessments collected. Section 4425-290 on page 10 applies existing enforcement statutes for the Department of Revenue and the Attorney General to the Alaska Tourism Marketing Assessment. Section 4425-295 on page 10 establishes the Alaska Tourism Marketing Fund. Section 4425-300 on pages 10 through 11 defines terms used in this chapter, assessment, board, business segment, and traveler. Section 6 designates the leading statewide nonprofit tourism marketing association as a transition board. The transition board will hold an initial election to determine the list of nominees for the Travel Alaska Board and proposed assessment rates. Following the election, nominees for the Travel Alaska Board will be forwarded to the governor. Once the Travel Alaska Board is established through the appointment process, the transition board will submit any proposed assessment rates approved in the election to the Travel Alaska Board, at which point the transition board will dissolve. Subsection B provides that if the governor rejects the initial list or a portion of the initial list of nominees, the transition board will submit another list for consideration. Subsection C permits the Travel Alaska Board to ratify assessments proposed by the transition board, and subsection D refers to Section 4425-300 for the definition of assessment.
Thank you very much, Natasha. I appreciate you walking us through this sectional.
Thanks, Senator.
Now I'd like to invite Colleen Stevens and Sarah Leonard forward, and along with John Lambeth, who's online. Welcome, and I've invited you to provide comments to the committee as we contemplate the proposal that the industry has forwarded to us.
Thank you, Senator, and to the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to testify and the opportunity presented to create the legislative framework for a potential Alaska Tourism Improvement District. And before I start with my comments, I'd like to thank Senator Costello for her leadership and over many years in championing and providing information about Alaska's visitor industry. It's very much appreciated by our industry. And also, most recently, thank you to her staff, Natasha, for helping us facilitate through this process. Very much appreciated. For the record, my name is Sarah Leonard. I'm the president and CEO of the Alaska Travel Industry Association. For those of you that may not know about the Alaska Tourism Travel Industry Association, ATI is the state's leading nonprofit membership trade association for Alaska's visitor industry. We represent over 650 tourism businesses across the state that represent various sectors and the regions throughout Alaska. Alaska is also the state's contract manager for Alaska's Destination Marketing Program, and we are responsible for statewide marketing and program development. Tourism has been a bright spot in Alaska's economy, in large part to past state support and investment. The state has a long history in supporting statewide tourism marketing, as you know. Unfortunately, Alaska's investment in destination marketing has declined from $16 million to $3 million. This includes a 90% decrease in state funding between the years 2014 and 2017. While most states across the country's support for destination marketing has increased over the last 5 years, we are at the bottom when it comes to state funding, just before the state of Delaware. In comparison, last year, the state of California spent $119 million in tourism marketing. And when we look at total dollars spent on tourism marketing nationally by these destinations, Alaska accounts for only 0.3% of all national spending on state tourism promotion. That was in 2017. That's down from 2.5% in 2014. Those seem like small numbers, but what this means is that our market share is declining while the industry is growing nationally. We're not keeping up with the pace of national destination marketing spending. And while Alaska visitor numbers are going up, we're seeing volumes and record numbers of visitors, especially in our cruise sector. We are appreciative of our cruise partners. Independent travel is stagnant. We are losing what we could be capturing with more competitive marketing funding. Alaska is losing competition to other states that are actively pursuing the traveling public. As you all know also, Alaska is a long-haul destination and requires advanced planning. Today's marketing efforts do pay future dividends. We are providing economic benefit to the state of Alaska. However, we are seeing a decline in independent travelers with less competitive marketing budget. This could mean fewer visitors, which translates into reduced visitor spending, fewer jobs, and lower business revenue. ATI recently engaged a research group called Tourism Economics to conduct an independent analysis of the state's competitiveness in terms of destination marketing investments and Alaska's tourism sector performance. Tourism Economics, using existing data from national and local sources like the McDowell Group, reported Alaska lost $189 million in visitor spending between 2012 and 2016, and $57 million in visitor spending in 2016 alone. As Senator Costello mentioned, you told us to come up with a funding solution, and we heard you. This was our opportunity to develop a plan to phase out reliance on unrestricted general funds for marketing, moving towards a self-sustaining program funded by industry. That was in the House bill, the operating budget in FY17. And I can tell you this was a little bit of a wake-up call for our industry, and you gave us the opportunity to continue this dialogue and to hopefully find a solution finally to sustainable and secure tourism marketing funding. ATI and industry leaders at that time considered a number of different possible funding mechanisms. I can tell you at our board meetings and throughout industry discussions, we had some very colorful and dynamic discussions among our industry.
As we consider different models for how we could generate new revenue and come forward with a solution to the legislature and to the state, there were parameters that we kept in mind. And those were and continue to be that any new funding solution should not be reliant on one industry segment or funding source, and that revenue should focus primarily on visitor activity with the least amount of impact that would impact Alaskans. And that also that any assessment or new revenue could be passed on to the customer, could be passed on to the visitor. And that perhaps most importantly, any successful plan for the industry to consider assessing themselves would be a package and a partnership, a private-public partnership with the state, and that would continue to leverage the vehicle rental car tax that the state already collects. The existing vehicle rental car tax statute, again, as many of you probably know, includes intent language that the legislature may appropriate the actual balance of the vehicle rental car tax account for tourism development and marketing. One of the industry's priority is that we want a partnership with the state. We're willing to consider assessing ourselves if we can have a continued collaboration with the state and an investment, and we're pointing to those dollars as existing revenue that the state collects that can be put towards tourism marketing and development. With that, I'm going to let Mr. Lambeth, who I think is on the phone, make comments.
Mr. Lambeth, can you hear us?
I can. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for allowing me to call in this afternoon. It's a pleasure to be with you. My brief testimony today will focus on providing some background on destination marketing and a bit of a national perspective on tourism improvement districts. I appreciated your comments, Madam Chair, at the opening about the importance of the travel and tourism industry. It's critically important, as you noted, 47,000 jobs in Alaska and across the U.S. That's 1 in 9 jobs that are dependent on travel and tourism. But sometimes folks are tempted to ask the question, why should we be doing destination marketing on a coordinated basis in the first place? Why not just let the individual businesses do their own marketing? And there really are two compelling reasons that doesn't work and that we need to do destination marketing on a larger scale. The first is that the primary motivator of a trip is usually the experience of the destination. It's not one particular lodging establishment, it's not one attraction, but it is the destination itself that is providing the motivation, and so that destination needs to be marketed as a unit. Second is the question of scale. And that is, not one individual business has the ability on its own to market Alaska. And so it takes the industry coming together as a group to coordinate, to pool its resources, to do destination marketing on a much broader scale. And sometimes we talk about the virtuous cycle of destination marketing, because it is, if you think about it in a circular fashion, we do, when we invest in travel and marketing promotion, it creates demand. That demand, in turn, creates visitor spending. And that visitor spending, in fact, spurs new jobs and new tax revenues to allow for investment back into travel and tourism again. And so it is not only a good investment, but it's something where, if there is investment into it, we see many benefits coming out of it. And you mentioned the tax revenue that Alaskans get from tourism and travel. Across the United States, that figure is about $160 billion a year in state and local taxes that the travel and tourism industry generates. This idea of a tourism improvement district is not a new one. And in fact, if you look at similar models that have been developed over the years, we can look back to the 1930s when the agricultural industry put together what were called agricultural marketing owners. And essentially that was groups of folks in the agricultural industry that had a product. They would get together, levy a charge on themselves, and use that money to promote the product. And I know you've seen it in Alaska, and there are many examples of this, but everything from individual fruit growers, nut growers, all kinds of commodities within the agricultural sector that have used these agricultural marketing orders to do exactly what we're proposing with the TID. In the 1960s, that model was expanded to downtown improvement activities. And that was the birth of the very first business improvement district, which are essentially downtown organizations that levy an assessment on the properties in the downtown. They raise that money, and that money then is spent primarily on clean and safe activities. You have these in various places in Alaska. There are about 2,000 of them across North America, and it's providing a stable, reliable, consistent source of funding for those downtown improvement activities. Well, in the 1990s, some folks in California got together and said, if this can be used in the agricultural industry and it's been successfully used in our downtown promotion industry, why can't we use this for tourism promotion purposes? And that led to the very first tourism improvement district. And essentially what those districts are an assessment on tourism businesses. The money is collected and then returned typically to an organization, typically a destination marketing organization, then that markets the destination. And some of the advantages of this kind of a funding model are that it creates a level playing field so that you know if your particular business is in and there's a similarly situated business nearby, that business is in too. So it is a level playing field. There are no free riders. Everybody, the industry agrees on this. If the legislature grants approval to go through this process and the industry agrees on it, there will be a level playing field. There's also transparency in its operations, as you can see by what's been proposed here under the Travel Alaska Board, and it does create a reliable, consistent, stable source of funding. The concept was first started in California, but it has moved across the United States. There are now 167 districts across 14 states, and if I were to show you a map, you would see these spread out all over the country. And there are another 11 states now that are in the process of either adopting legislation or forming tourism improvement districts. So it's one that I think we'll see a lot more of. If I could leave you with two important concepts from my testimony today, I think the most important things I would share with you are, number one, this concept has been essentially in other places a bipartisan concept. It's something that Republicans and Democrats, left and right, have agreed upon. We've seen it done in liberal places, like many places in California. We've seen it done in very conservative states, states like Tennessee and Kansas. It doesn't tend to be an issue of the left or right. Most folks understand the importance of the industry and how this supports the industry, and so we've seen both sides of the aisle come together to support these programs. And second, the last thing I would leave you with is that destinations that have adopted this, it really has been a game changer for their destinations. They have essentially come up with models that provide a stable, dedicated source of funding. It really takes the reliance off of the general fund. I do want to congratulate ATIA for doing this. It took an awful lot of work of this board. They were responsive, I think, to the request of the legislature and spent a lot of time working out the details of what this would look like. And so they brought back to you something that if adopted, if approved by the legislature and signed by the governor, and if ultimately approved by the industry, this is something that is going to change destination promotion activities in Alaska, I suspect, for a long, long time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, John. I appreciate you being online. And if you could remain online in case there are questions afterwards. And next, yes, we will have Colleen Stevens. Welcome. And please feel free to provide comments on Senate Bill 110.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And thank you to all members of the committee for giving us the time today and to hear our industry's concerns. I am Colleen Stevens. I'm currently, as Senator Costello said, the chair of the Tourism Marketing Board. I also serve on the ATIA board as their government relations person. My real life is operating boats in Prince William Sound, doing glacier and wildlife cruises with our family's company, Stan Stevens Cruises. So multiple hats, and I do have a business owner perspective to share with you some today. Since 2017, when we first introduced SB 110, so just under a year ago, we as an industry have worked greatly together to hear industry concerns and educate the industry on the bill. We had lots of work to explain to them how a TID would work and hear and answer their questions. We've heard concerns from the industry on equity. We've heard concerns on cost to business, how they would participate. We've heard questions such as, how would I pay? How much would I pay? We've heard questions relative to how would they benefit from the TID and what would a marketing program look like? And one of the larger questions we've heard is, will we still advocate for partnership with the state with vehicle rent-a-car funds? And most importantly, what would the Travel Alaska Board look like and be structured? And working with Senator Costello's office, in front of you today is a bill that answers and helps address many, many of those concerns. So since April, we've come a long way to be able to hear lots of those things. We're not stopping with outreach at that. We're continuing to have monthly Q&A sessions where businesses across Alaska can call in and discuss between Sarah and board members concerns and questions about the TID process. We're having small group meetings, one-on-one meetings, and we also, as an industry, have created the TID advisory group to the board of directors, and that has members from all sectors, and we are really welcoming anyone to participate in that. Our goal is to make this an open dialogue, an open process that's very transparent, and we've worked hard to do that throughout the industry. We've had to really embrace, and this is something we've been working with John on for 2 years, so we know the understanding and have had been able to start answering questions very detailed. But one of the things as we explain a TID that really helps folks understanding is that it's a two-phase process. What we're coming in front of you today with is phase one, which is the enabling legislation. It's a legislation that outlines the process for us and gives us the tools to enact the district. Phase two is taking the framework you as a legislature will create for us and allowing us to vote on what sectors may be included in the assessment, what rates those sectors would pay, what have a vote for the board development, and then the implementation of the program. That's the phase two, which comes on our side, and that's the work we've already started on. As a small business owner, and more than likely a potential payer of the TID, we're asking you to work with us to help pass SB 110. The enabling legislation, as I said, gives us the tools necessary. It allows us to create not just a sustainable but a predictable funding model for Alaska tourism and really for Alaskans and large businesses, small and large, that do tourism in Alaska. It's important to kind of concentrate a little bit on what could a well-funded tourism program for Alaska mean. And the tourism economics program that Sarah mentioned earlier and that research study that was conducted showed that for every dollar spent on tourism promotion in Alaska results in $58 of visitor spending, $21 in income for local residents, and $2.84 in state and local taxes. That return on investment is a very substantial note and a very positive investment in world forward. To me, as a small business owner, again, it's almost scarier to ask, what if we don't have a well-funded marketing program? And to be very honest, the larger corporations operating in Alaska are, if we don't have a well-funded marketing program for Alaska, aren't going to feel the impact. The farther you get down that chain, you get to small communities and you get to small businesses and you get to more remote locations in Alaska, that's where the impact is going to be felt most if we don't have a program out there that is convincing people to even consider our state as a destination. So that, you know, that broad-based program is enticing folks and putting that image of Alaska and convincing them that's the travel destination they want to go to. Our chance to act is now. With the sunset of the Alaska Tourism Marketing Board and a few other changes, this is the time for us to take that next step to change the tourism marketing funding for Alaska. Through SB 110, as has been mentioned, we're looking to create a partnership with the state. The state coming in with vehicle rental car tax money and us coming in with new assessment dollars. And we are asking you to make a policy change relative to the VRT. And the message and the reason we're doing this, not only is there, as Sarah mentioned, the intent language in the VRT for use for tourism marketing, us as an industry, via the McDowell Report and the economic impacts of the visitor industry study that was most recently done in 2015, shows that we're bringing, between taxes and fees, $105 million to the state every year. And that was a 15 study, so we're assuming, as we've watched some of those funds increase, that number, of course, is higher at this point in time. We're looking with the vehicle rental car tax as a 10% reinvestment of those funds we're bringing to you to continue to grow those dollars coming to the state as well as support our industry. By combining the VRT investment as well as the new funds from the assessment that's proposed in SB 110, we truly are creating that bill that's going to guide our industry into the future for tourism marketing and continue to fill what we call the tourism pipeline with the travelers into the future for Alaska. So thank you for hearing us, and I think we're good for questions, Madam Chair, when you are.
Great, and thank you very much for being here. I know you've been
in the building since session started and meeting with various people. I really appreciate, like we said earlier, that the legislature asked you to come forward as an industry with a plan, and here it is. So I really appreciate that. So before we get started, I did want to mention to committee members that we have several people that are available for questions. So as you think about your questions, I wanted to mention that we have Ken Alper, who is here in the room, Department of Revenue. We have Emily Nauman, who drafted the legislation. She's online with Ledge Legal, and she has provided a memo that you may have seen about the bill. John Lambeth, who we heard from earlier, who didn't mention this, but it's my understanding that he's has helped author many of the bills throughout the country and has worked with our tourism industry. So he has in-depth knowledge of the bill. And then, of course, Colleen and Sarah, who are here, and I appreciate, again, you being here. So with that, I'll go ahead and open it up for questions from committee members. Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I actually have a host of questions, and I hope, Madam Chair, that I can submit some of them in writing because I think they take a little more thinking about to frame them.
Senator Gardner, if that would be wonderful. I want to mention to members that for any questions that you have, let us, if you could get those to Natasha, and if you could actually ask them all so that everyone here can hear what those questions are, and then perhaps...
They're not very well formed, but I'll do the best I can because I'm trying to keep up and listen and write questions and stuff. So, but specifically for Colleen, did your outreach as you were putting this together include non-member business owners? And how do we identify people who should be part of this movement? I mean, there may be people that, you know, rent a room out and they don't necessarily have licenses, or, I mean, is Uber included as driving for tourism, that kind of thing. I'm just interested in the specifics.
Happily. And so to the latter part of your question, if I don't cover it all, just remind me what I might forget along the way. No segment has been identified as in or out yet.
That's Colleen.
Really,
sorry. Just for those people listening online,
yes.
Well, if you could just mention your name, please.
Yes.
Thank
sorry,
you.
Colleen Stevenson, through the chair. My apologies. No individual segment has been directed in and out. Folks of taxicab and Ubers, I will say, have not been a part of a conversation yet that has taken place at the board level. And what we've done in our outreach is use CVBs and chambers, and I may let Sarah address some of this when I'm done because she's participated and coordinated many of those meetings. So we're reaching out to local regional groups that their membership is not necessarily our membership. So we're reaching out. We've met with the state chamber. We've had meetings with a whole variety of organizations that just aren't our member base. And then once again, who's in and who's out, that's really the stage two piece. And through these discussions, I think it's been great actually for us as an industry because we're learning more and more about each other. You know, what goes on in South Central may not be what goes on in Southeast and may not be what goes on in the Arctic. And so we're learning how, as businesses offering similar tours, have different interactions and the way that we would put together that phase two to be able to bring a successful vote to the industry, we're learning along the way.
Thank you. And the next question, Madam Chair, if I may.
Please continue.
Okay. So the they're both related to the assessed money. And one is, while the gross sales of the business, gross revenue, is confidential and always will be, except under the specified situations, will we know as the legislature, or will there be any kind of report about how many members are in each category given the different amounts? So if you know, part of your members are at, say, 0.25% and part of them are at 0.75%, will we know how much is coming from each and how many businesses are participating at that level?
I was going to... Madam Chair, would it be okay if John Lambeth answered that question?
Absolutely.
In different locations for us?
I was actually going to suggest that, and if I didn't mention earlier, Brittany Sione-Haywood from the Division of Economic Development is also available for questions. So I failed to mention you earlier. Sorry about that. John, will you go ahead and take that question from Senator Gardner?
I'd be happy to. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Gardner, typically the answer to that question is yes, that you would know how many businesses are in those categories. You would know aggregate numbers. It is quite common to share aggregate information that in no way reveals the individual confidential information, as you correctly identified, the individual business revenues. So you would get summary information. You would have information where you would know how many businesses and how much from each category.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, if I might continue. Okay. So regarding the contributions from individual members that are assessed, those contributions can be passed along to the customers on an itemized receipt that discloses that. So if I'm a small business owner and I'm a member and I'm paying this assessment and I have an assessment of a certain amount, but I get it all back, what happens to that money? Am I basically held harmless for participating in the costs of this new board where the state money is spent and I'm getting mine back? Is that how that would work?
Through the chair, I guess a clarifying question to make sure we answer what you're getting at. Are you discussing contributions into future marketing programs, or are you, I guess I'm trying to make sure we answer your question correctly.
Well, my understanding of the structure of the whole thing is that part of the money potentially comes from the state. Any legislature can appropriate it or not from the
VRT?
Yeah, the vehicle rental tax. But some part of it also comes from individual members who are assessed, and they can pass that assessment along to their customers, and so they get it back, right? It goes back into their pockets. It goes back. I mean, how does that work?
Do you want to go ahead?
Through the chair, this is Sarah Leonard, Senator Gardner. The next step of the process would be, if this legislation passes, then the Department of Revenue would, for those businesses that are part of the assessment, send a form for that business, and some of it would be self-reporting, to self-report what they owe in that assessment back to the state. So the state would collect then what the business has taken in from the customer.
If I might, Madam Chair, so if I'm a business owner and I have the option to pass it along to my customers, but when I get it, I give it back to the state, why would I do that?
Through the chair, I'll do my best, and John Lambeth probably can step in as well. So once the assessment is passed and we're successful in working at this through the entire project and when we're signed into law, the assessment becomes compulsory. Mm-hmm. So the way it would work is, and I'll use myself as the example. I was in San Diego recently on business, and my hotel receipt at the bottom had both not just the state assessment but the local assessment for San Diego on it. That hotelier collected those funds for me and remitted that to the state or their collection agency, because their constitution is different than ours, but was remitted to the collection site. That is then turned in hand to the folks at Visit California implementing their marketing program. So it is, when the bill here says may be passed on to the guest, what that's saying is me as a business owner could say, I want to add it on the bottom of the receipt, and if so, it needs to say Travel Alaska assessment. But if I feel my pricing structure can already sustain a 1% and I don't want to ask the guest to pay more, I can take that out of my net and my bottom line. That's what that clarification is. And I don't know if, John, you want to, if I strayed away on that.
Thank you, Colleen and Senator, Madam Chair. You got it exactly right. The business owes the assessment regardless. So if it's a $100 transaction and it's a 1% charge, the business owes a dollar. They can choose whether they want to take that dollar out of their revenues or they can pass that dollar on to the customer. It's up to them.
Senator Gardner, when my aide went through the sectional, it's on page 4 of the sectional, mm-hmm. at the top. It was where it provides that a business subject to an assessment may pass on the cost to its customers if the amount is disclosed in advance, a receipt is given, and the assessment is listed as a separate charge. And it sounds like they can choose how they address that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What I didn't understand is once they passed it along, then what happened to the money, the part that the customer has paid them. And I understand now that that would go back to the state, and the owner sort of still decides whether they're swallowing it themselves or reimbursing the state.
Senator Garner, do you have further questions?
I will. I have to figure them out.
Okay, why don't I go now to Vice Chair Senator Meyer.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chairman. And thank you both and everyone who's been involved with this. This has been a struggle, a challenge. The 18 years I've been here, every year we try to determine what is the right amount to give to marketing, because marketing Alaska is very important. And I know sometimes we've done a 50-50 program where the state might put in $5 million if the industry put in $5 million. And, you know, we've had all sorts of clever ideas. But this one, I think, is the best. So let me ask a couple questions. I know this is kind of an ongoing process, and you may not have the answers yet. But do we have any idea what this would raise, this assessment fee?
Senator Meyer, this is Sarah Leonard, and through the chair, we've used an example, and it's just an example because we haven't identified those assessments and what would be comfortable among industry. But when we've used an example of a 1% on very broad-based accommodations, tour activities, we project through numbers we've gotten through the McDowell report that we could raise around $7 million.
Okay, very good. If I may continue.
Senator Meyer.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're, again, still trying to figure out who all is part of this assessment program, because I know some of the smaller hotels get upset with the bed and breakfast, and then now there's, what is it, VROs, vacation rental homes?
VRBO.
Oh, what's that again?
VRBO.
VR. Yeah, so I don't know how they would fit in this, and obviously that's probably part of the process of figuring out.
Senator Meyer, again, this is Sarah Leonard through the chair. And I know in other locations and in other jurisdictions where there are VRBO or Airbnb companies, they have worked out where they might not be part of the assessment. They have worked out individual agreements to pay any type of assessment that has been passed. And I know Mr. Lambeth could probably give specific examples if you want, but that they have been part of programs through separate agreements when a jurisdiction has passed a tourism improvement district.
Okay, very good. And Madam Chair, if I may?
Senator Meyer.
So do you visualize when this board gets together and you determine 2% is the right number, or maybe 2% is good for 2019, but then you meet as a board, and in 2020 you want to bump it up to 2.5. Would you then make that recommendation to the legislature, and then the legislature would assign that assessment, or are we out of the picture once this bill is passed?
Colleen Stevens, I'm speaking, Senator Meyer, through the chair. The way the bill is set up is with that menu, very similar to ASME. Mm-hmm. You are setting the range for us to be able to have elections internally in the industry to choose from, basically. So you're setting basically the assessment ranges, so, and the levels, and that's why you'll see it in that 0.25 increment, so that there's some variation there, 2% being the max. That then comes to the industry vote section. And so the way, the kind of a, you know, an outline of the way the process would work, and the first one, of course, is an interim board, but the first election, we would first have to set the definitions of a tourism segment, business, and there's three tourism descriptions there, and have Department of Revenue ratify those for us. So that's one of your checks using the Department of Revenue, that we are looking at definitions that make sense within the business. We then take those definitions and the proposed levels of assessment to an industry vote, and the only ones voting on those, in that vote, is those that will be assessed. So it's not all 2,000 tourism businesses that are voting. If we're focusing, say, on hotel and retail, and I'm just using examples, it would be retail and hoteliers that are voting in that election to install that assessment. And they're also voting to install the Travel Alaska Board recommendations that could move forward to the governor. And that is a weighted vote based on the amount, the gross revenues that you'd be paying towards this assessment.
Okay.
And if we, sorry, just no, to continue but, on, if we were to modify that, so amend that assessment at any point in time. So first of all, in the bill, there's a six-year mandatory time in which we have to go back to the payers and the industry for a vote. And that does two things. One, it's a check and balance. It's if the program is working and the industry wants to support it, we're going back to a vote to successfully re-implement it. That's also a time we could change very easily the assessment if it wants to be expanded and or rates changed, whatever the industry is feeling at that point in time. There is an amendment process where we would have to publish and go out to vote and go through that whole process again in the interim. And then there also is a termination clause. So if at any point in time the program isn't working for the industry, the money may be diverted, there is a termination clause to terminate our assessment down to zero in that process.
Okay, very good.
Senator Meyer?
Madam Chair, and then so can a business decide to terminate their participation, or once you're in, and I'm assuming this is not a voluntary program, right?
Senator Meyer, through the chair, this is Sarah Leonard. As Colleen mentioned, if there were a trigger for the industry to terminate the assessment, that would have to be decided by the Travel Alaska Board and then go out to vote to those payers, and then it would take a 50% vote of the payers to terminate the assessment. But an individual business cannot terminate their own assessment if it is voted in.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have many questions, too, so I can save them for later and give others a chance. But I guess, and it's probably in the bill, I just haven't read it, who's in charge of enforcement? For example, Senator Michiki stays at my hotel and I charge him 2% assessment fee, but I decide to keep it.
Senator Meyer, through the chair, this is Sarah Leonard. One of the values of partnering with the state of Alaska is that we've incorporated into Senate Bill 110 existing statutes that the state uses for enforcement of other taxes and fees that the state collects. So the state would be responsible enforcement of collecting and of the business revenue that the businesses are remitting to the state, just like they do in other collection processes. And perhaps Mr. Lambeth could follow up with more specifics.
Senator Meyer, did you have any further questions?
Not at this time.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Michiki?
I'm okay. There were some great questions asked. A couple of mine were answered. So
okay. Sorry. I'm going to go ahead and ask Mr. Lambeth a question or two, and then we'll go back to Senator Gardner. Mr. Lambeth, it's my understanding that a tourism investment district is usually comprised of a region of a state, and yet in this version, in this what we're contemplating here, the entire state of Alaska is a tourism investment district. Can you comment on that?
Yes, that's right. It's been most commonly used in individual destinations, sometimes a city, sometimes multiple cities, multiple counties, but it has been used for statewide marketing for a long time, actually in one state, and that's California. And that's been a very successful statewide district. And there are several other states right now that are also looking at the model. And I suspect in the next 4 or 5 years, you'll see other states fund their state tourism offices and their state promotion efforts the same way.
Thank you. My other question has to do with the research. So one of the things that will happen in addition to the marketing efforts that research will be conducted, and I'm curious if the members will have access to that research that's conducted through the money that's spent on marketing.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will maybe ask Sarah to supplement this as well. I can tell you what typically would happen is, yes, research would be conducted. It's a critical part of destination marketing, so that the kinds of marketing, the channels you're using, the customers you're going after is all based on a very solid platform and on very good research. And typically that research is widely available. And these districts tend to be very transparent in their operation so that folks have access to those materials. They can see the research. They can see the marketing. They can see exactly how it was all put together so that they know how their dollars are being spent.
And then what happens if a business wants to opt out or they don't agree to this scenario? Is there an avenue for that, or how have you addressed that or seen that addressed in other states?
Madam Chair, there is not an option to opt out. And it's, you know, there are, if you think about it, there are a couple of different models. So one model would be a voluntary model, that where somebody could opt out of a charge. That's more of a membership kind of model. And that model works very well where you're providing a benefit to certain businesses and not providing it to other businesses. In the context of destination marketing, really what we're talking about is sort of a rising tide lifting all boats. And so if you are doing destination marketing and you have a broad band of benefit across many, many businesses and many industries, and you have a voluntary model in terms of your revenue, you basically have free riders. You have some that are paying and some that aren't, but everybody benefiting. And that's why destination after destination have turned to this kind of a model, a compulsory model. That is, if a majority of the industry gets together and agrees and says, we're for this, that, in fact, they put in place for a limited period of time a compulsory model where everybody would be paying in and it would be a level playing field.
Thank you very much. We also have Senator Michicki does have a question for us.
Yeah, actually for John. Aren't there some entire countries that have a VAT tax that's used for that purpose? I know I've been to Australia and I remember seeing that on all of my receipts. So we asked in the U.S. about entire states or regions, but do some countries have a countrywide tax?
They do. And in fact, we've done some work. We haven't worked in the tourism industry in Australia. We have worked in the UK, and they do have taxes like that. But they tend to be used for a lot of different kinds of activities. So they can use them for government services. They might dedicate a portion to tourism promotion. So even in some of those places, and in the UK in particular, there are now local destinations. There are three now in the UK that have tourism improvement districts, and they've talked about using that on a national model. But it really varies a lot, and even within the United States, it varies a lot from state to state and certainly from country to country in terms of the way the taxes are levied, the nature of the tax, and then are they really truly dedicated taxes or are they something that have to be appropriated? And, of course, in Alaska, with your constitutional provisions, there is no opportunity to set up a dedicated fund. These monies would still need to be appropriated. But we think this model where the industry is leading the effort, setting it, requiring a vote amongst themselves, and ultimately managing the dollars is going to be a very successful model for you given the constraints that you have.
Senator Michicki?
Yeah, thank you. Just one last one for any of you here on this subject. Is there anything in this bill that keeps you from partnering? I mean, even though you could potentially raise $7 million here if this were to pass, I would assume there are entities spending that much annually on Alaska promotion for specific methods like cruises and such. Does this keep us from a larger scale partnership? I mean, I just have a tendency to believe that we could be more efficient as a unit as opposed to separating by industry or region.
Senator, Colleen Stevens, I will do my best through the chair to answer. I always explain the destination marketing is a bit of a food chain, and you're correct. It's our goal with destination marketing of Alaska is to get the image out there and convince a traveler that Alaska can be for them and get them to start researching, okay, I've committed to Alaska. That's where our regions and our communities come in hand to be able to step up and say, now that you've committed to Alaska, here's what we can do in the Kenai. Here's what we can do in Fairbanks. Here's what we can do in the Arctic, and have them identify what regions or communities they should be visiting. And then it becomes my responsibility as a business to both work with the state and those regions to convert that to a return and a customer in my door. And that destination, as John said, it raises all boats. The farther you get, especially in Alaska, from that mainstream is where we'll benefit. We will always continue to benefit and work with all of our partners in the industry. We have the cruise industry at our table, both on the board and the ATMB currently. This will help raise their tide. So as we talk about losing market share in Alaska without having tourism marketing dollars, we are gaining cruise seats, but nowhere near at the same rate as other destinations are. So we even have a market share issue within the cruise industry that this will assist with. So all of those partners will be at the table in assisting us in making sure that we're partnering with them in one shape or another to continue to move Alaska forward.
Senator Meyer? And then Senator Gardner, you've been waiting. Okay. Sorry about that.
Thank you. Yeah, actually, Madam Chair, I have so many questions that if he wants to go first, okay, then you can just stop me when
okay.
You
I just have
quit.
One for now.
Senator Meyer?
Well, sometimes the answer, you know, creates another question. But you were talking about partners at the table, and it seems like almost any large municipality in Alaska has their own marketing program, ACVB and Anchorage Convention Visitors Bureau. I think Kenai has something. Fairbanks, I know, has something. So are they at the table as well and participate in the marketing of tourism?
Senator Meyer and Sarah Leonard, through the chair, yes, they're very much at the table. Both Visit Anchorage's CEO, Explore Fairbanks CEO, and representatives from the KPTMC have been part of the dialogue. Those community destination marketing management organizations have at times and currently sit on the ATIA board as well as the ATMB board. And so we are consistently partnering with them, and they're part of the marketing program. And if I could just follow up on the other question that you had earlier while I have the mic. And I don't know if this further clarifies that if this legislation passes with those range of assessments, mm-hmm, it only goes up to 2%. So in the legislation currently. So if that were ever to change for whatever reason, we would have to come back to the legislature. But it only goes up to 2%.
Okay, very good. I'm glad you clarified that. And then, Madam Chair, mm-hmm, so the amount from the vehicle rental tax is also fixed, or can that float as well?
This is Sarah Leonard, Senator Meyer through the chair. We are not suggesting in this legislation to change what the existing rate is for the vehicle rental car tax. And I believe that's at 10% for cars and 3% for recreational vehicles. But in this legislation, we're not suggesting a change to that rate.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Gardner?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. So on the option of the question of no opt-out option, the assessment applies to everybody, whether they're members or not, but you have to be a member in order to vote.
Senator Gardner, through the chair, this is Sarah Leonard. The assessment would apply to any segment that's identified as a payer, mm-hmm, of the assessment, and then those payers would be the ones voting.
Thank you. So you wouldn't have to be a member. You have to be a member to be on the board?
Senator Gardner, through the chair, you do not have to be a member of the Alaska Travel Industry Association. If industry identifies a segment of the tourism industry, it doesn't pertain to ATI membership. It's any business as part of that segment in Alaska's visitor industry.
Okay. Thank you. So it's kind of like a union. In a way. So, Madam Chair, the questions I have are the appropriation process, and look in Section 2, where a person collecting and remitting the tax can request that it go into the Tourism Marketing Fund. The legislature still has to agree to appropriate that money. And it seems like I understand the rationale for it, but it seems like it has a certain risk. It may or may not be appropriated in any given year, so it's not necessarily really stable, whereas when the members pay themselves, that is an amount you know you can count on. So would it be simpler to have a grant process, which would have some of the same issues, but less accounting, less processing?
Senator Gardner, through the chair, and this is Sarah Leonard. We are open to many. If you have a simpler process, for sure, we love those ideas. I think the point around the pointing to the vehicle rental car tax was the history that Senator Costello pointed out, that we can point to that intent language. And also, as Colleen mentioned, we believe it's a very reasonable reinvestment of those dollars back into tourism marketing.
Thank you. I tend to agree that it sounds reasonable. It just creates a vulnerability also, but there's vulnerabilities in state funding anyhow. Why is there a variable number of board members proposed?
Senator Gardner, through the chair, this is Colleen Stevens. The size of the board, as our current ATIA board worked through legislative recommendations, that was a range in which they were comfortable proposing forward, to be very honest, is, you know, 21 to 25. Our understanding, and possibly Mr. Lambeth could clarify this for us, is once again in phase two, we would be writing a guiding document that would clarify what that would be. So when we go to election, it wouldn't be, oh, we're going to elect 21 to 25. It would be, we've settled in on the board of director size. It's 21, and that's what the industry has decided on in that guiding document in phase two, and we would move that forward.
Brief at ease. Hey, Natalia. Order. Senator Garner, you were
Thank
in
you.
The process
just
of asking
stop
questions.
Me whenever you've had enough. So it's kind of like having a statute and regulations in that sense. Okay. So the next question is, why create a new board? Why not use ATIA?
Senator Garner, through the chair, and this is Sarah Leonard, we looked at that option, and we met with some constitutional challenges as we were pursuing legislation that had a partnership with the state because of some of the other reasons that we talked about as far as enforceability, transparency, accountability, and that if this legislation passes, that with this partnership with the state, we had to create a board within the state that met the constitutional authority of the governor's authority. We looked at initially first just granting to ATIA as a simple process, and there is challenges with the state of Alaska granting a private nonprofit association to be able to collect funds and have taxation authority. So in working through those constitutional challenges and wanting to have a partnership with the state, it developed into creating this Travel Alaska board that also it is set up around how TID boards are set up around the country, so that the payers are the ones being elected to the board and are managing the funds that they're contributing for tourism marketing.
Thank you. It's a good explanation. So what about assessments on tourism segments that are not headquartered in Alaska? You know, somebody we have Four Seasons, big national, maybe international chain of hotels. What if they decline to be, say, forthcoming about their revenue situation? Or, say, cruise ships, how do they allocate how much of what it would be taxable within Alaska? What do we know about that?
Senator Gardner, through the chair, this is Colleen Stevens. Two parts to your question. And just sort of as a clarification, because you mentioned cruise ships directly themselves, our research shows that a direct assessment of the cost of the cruise, because that's taxing interstate commerce, is one thing that could run, and how that money can be spent is very carefully outlined in federal statute with the Interstate Commerce Clause. As you were referring to a hotel that may be owned by someone that's not inside of Alaska, something to that effect, it is the business being done in Alaska that the assessment is direct on. And so the same as corporate income taxes, if they were to be filing, or any other form of tax collection, there is a reporting mechanism utilizing the state, again, as a partner, and it's outlined as DOR here, that would help us with that process.
Thank you. I think I have some other questions on that score at some point, but Section 4425280 on the bill, 4425280, deep into the bill. Thank you. My note to myself says, huh? Can you explain that?
Okay. So, Senator Gardner, just so you're aware, my plan is that after they reply to this question, mm-hmm. I'd like to have Ken Alper come up
And also, I would like to, I have a few questions for Emily Nauman, who's online with Ledge Legal. So if you want to respond to that section of the bill, I think Senator Garner's wondering what it achieves.
Sorry. I think if I have time to actually read it in detail, I might get that myself, though.
Senator Gardner, through the chair, this is Colleen Stevens, and I will answer it to my knowledge, and John may be able to clarify if I stray off afterwards. Basically, because in Alaska, many of our tourism businesses currently aren't paying a form of a tax mm-hmm. to the state, we need to have value determined of what their gross revenue estimates may be for the first round of elections. So we need to work with the Department of Revenue as a confidential place to collect those numbers to determine what the assessment would be for each business. So once we have a successful election and we're moving on, to be able to go through that process and determine. So the election is a weighted vote, and we need to determine based on gross revenues what that weight is. So first we have to determine the revenues to get to the weighted vote. Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay. Perfect.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Colleen and Sarah, for being before the committee today. We won't be moving the bill. This is just the first introduction. We are not having public testimony today, so I just wanted to give the members a chance to hear the bill and form any questions that they might have. And again, if you have any, just feel free to provide those to my office, and we'll make sure that all the members get those questions and the answers. So
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all for your time.
Ken, if you wouldn't mind coming forward, and in the meantime, Emily Nauman is online with Ledge Legal. And Emily, have you been listening to the discussion?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great.
So this is Senator Costello. I have two questions. One is related to the issues surrounding taxation authority, and if you have any comments on how the bill addresses that and the powers of the legislature. And then also, are there any structural issues that you want to mention or bring to the members' attention related to the board?
Sure. Let me start with for the record, this is Emily Nauman. I'm with the Legislative Legal. Let me start with the taxation issue. Anytime that a portion or even the appearance of a portion of the authority to tax leaves the state, or more specifically leaves the legislature, that raises a concern that we'd be violating the Constitution's prohibition against the delegation to tax. There's one particularly helpful case on this topic in Alaska, and that was State v. Alex. And in that case, I believe it was an private aquaculture association set a tax or an assessment similar to the one in front of you and collected it from members and expended it. The Alaska Supreme Court held that that was an improper delegation of the legislature's authority to tax because all of that process occurred outside of the state, and again, it's the state that holds the authority to collect and raise a tax. In response, actually, to that case, the state set out some salmon assessment taxes on which also the ASME tax structure was modeled, and I believe that's sort of the loose tax structure of the bill in front of you. The ASME tax structure, or the tax structure in front of you, hasn't been tested by a court, so we really don't know whether or not it would be found to be constitutional. My final comment would be that this bill does stray a little bit farther, I'd say, towards the unconstitutional delegation of tax, especially in the transition provisions, than, say, the ASME model does, because of the authority given the initial transition board, which is exclusively a private organization, just like the organization was in State v. Alex. Related to the structural issues,
Emily,
there is... Yeah.
Thank you for, sometimes it's a little tricky when we've got folks online, but in the meantime, we have a question for you from Senator Michicki.
So thank you, Emily. I was actually concerned with that aspect of the bill myself. If this bill were to move forward and the structure were to move forward, couldn't a solution be as simple as the board provides a recommendation to the legislature, which must be approved and appropriated accordingly? Isn't it just the absence of the legislator actually acting that is the constitutional issue?
Yeah, to be through the chair, again, this is Emily Naumann with Legislative Legal, to answer the question, to be perfectly legal, to not raise any concerns in my mind, the legislature should be setting the rate of the tax and setting out who should be taxed in statute through a bill. It could easily do that after a recommendation from an industry or a private board.
Thank you.
Thank you, Emily. Senator Gardner?
Thank you, and thank you for testifying, Emily. I think this question actually is in your domain. On page 2, line 18 to 19, and it's talking about establishing the travel board, it says, exercise by the board of the powers conferred by AS 4425-200 to 4425-300 is an essential governmental function of the state. What does that mean?
That it's not a straightforward question to answer, and I'm not terribly familiar with the specific origin of that language, but my guess would be that it was to try to establish that the board is acting as a state function for the purpose of avoiding triggering the delegation of tax issue that we just spoke about. And excuse me, through the chair.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Emily. And I think then you were going to talk about the structure of the board next.
Sure. For the record, this is Emily with Legislative Legal. Beginning with, I think that this issue was raised possibly before in the committee hearing, but maybe not as precisely, that one of the unusual things about the board is that if a industry is not currently, or excuse me, a segment of the tourism industry is not currently assessed, they will not have representation on the board, which means the board could be in the unusual position of trying to determine an assessment rate or whether an assessment should be levied on a tourism segment that doesn't have representation on the board. Similarly, if there is no assessment, say for some reason all of the assessments are terminated, there would be no one to be on the board because the board is composed of representatives of assessed businesses. So that could be a little tricky potentially later on. I also wanted to comment, I guess, on the rental car tax. I've never seen a structure where a taxpayer requests where the proceeds of the tax get directed in state government. To me, that seems unusual, but I would also point out that it's not always going to be the tourism industry that pays the tax. In some instances, it will be the tourist, the traveler that pays the tax, and in that case, it's a third party or the tourism company that gets to decide where their tax that they're paying goes, and that's a bit unusual. I also had one other point I think worth considering, and that is right now the board submits a list of potential board members to the governor through an election process, but the bill doesn't specify what happens if the governor rejects all of the nominees elected through the election process, whether or not the board should be having another election, or whether at that point they should be selecting without going through the election process for nominees for the board to suggest to the governor.
Are there any further questions for Emily from members?
I have one.
Senator Michicki.
Emily, the other aspect of the vehicle rental tax, how this also wouldn't break out industrial or commercial in-state rentals. I believe it sort of lumps them all together. Is that correct?
That's my current understanding of the vehicle rental tax, yes, but I'd be happy to get back to you with a definitive answer.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Emily. Are there further questions of committee members? Okay, seeing none. Thank you very much, Emily. I appreciate you being online and listening to the testimony.
We also have Ken Alper here from the Department of Revenue. Welcome.
Afternoon, Madam Chair, and I'll put myself on the record. Ken Alper, Director of the Tax Division for the Department of Revenue. And I should declare a mild conflict. I am, through my wife, a member of the ATIA. We own a hotel here in Juneau and have been members for about 20 years.
Thank you for that. You know, I just was hoping you could explain to the committee how this would work from the Department of Revenue's standpoint.
Sure. Part of the, as this bill has evolved, and my understanding is the committee substitute before you is very similar to a bill that was introduced in the House. The original version had it in the Department of Commerce, and now it's in Revenue. It is, and we're a little bit black and white this way, I apologize, it is in many ways a tax. It happens to be self-directed, it happens to be designated, but we have to treat it as a tax. So our role will be in collecting it. We'll be establishing a relationship with the up to 2,000 businesses who would be paying this assessment in their various segments. We would help get them licensed, registered in the system, just like any other taxpayer in any of Alaska's other taxes. The police powers of the state essentially would enforce the payment of that. To Senator Gardner's earlier questions, if someone chooses not to pay, we have the ability to suspend their business license and all of our other powers. So then, in collecting that money and reporting on the sum totals, and then getting that money set aside in this fund that's subject to legislative appropriation would be going to the tourism marketing entity. The vehicle rental tax, there are some changes with how we would treat that, meaning that that currently is considered designated general fund. What the bill actually does is it converts it from a designated general fund that currently is appropriated to such things as park maintenance and some docks and harbor maintenance, that sort of thing, and turns it into an unrestricted category, and then makes it self-directed, where each individual vehicle rental taxpayer would decide whether they wanted to designate the money to this tourism entity or keep it unrestricted general funds. And I think that was one of the issues that Ms. Nauman identified as a little bit problematic, where you have a taxpayer-directed designation of some of their taxes. One of the more difficult and subtle roles envisioned for the Department of Revenue is in this mechanism for weighting, because before there is an approved assessment, before there is an actual tax, for lack of a better word, in place, the members of an individual segment, let's say whale-watching boats, are going to be held to a vote, and they're going to decide whether they're going to agree to pay this 1.5% or 2% assessment. It's not one person, one vote. It's $1, one vote. So we have to estimate what their revenue would be in the future and create a weighting mechanism so that when the votes come in, we could tell someone if 50% of the estimated dollars have voted yes or no. And that's important that function remain within the Department of Revenue. I think the members of the industry would not want the board, would not want the ATIA engaged in that side of the business, because obviously everyone knows their own revenue. And if they know what the weighting mechanism is, they'd be able to reverse engineer what all of their competitors' revenues were. And that's a level of confidentiality that I'm sure business members wouldn't be comfortable with. However, the Department of Revenue routinely has that level of private business information through our taxing relationships. So we would be the people collecting that information, establishing the weighting. And from reading the bill, I see the Division of Elections. It's treated like an Alaskan registered election. We would be working with them to help score, for lack of a better word, the election.
Are there questions of Mr. Alper from committee members? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe I missed it, but there's going to be a cost, isn't there, to the Department of Revenue, and maybe even need more manpower?
Yeah, thank you, through the chair, Senator Meyer. There's really two costs. This is, and you're all used to me talking about these by now, whenever there's a revenue measure, there's a capital fiscal note. There's a one-time cost of setting it up within our software, within our tax management system, a new module, a new function, and we're estimating for something at this scale at about $900,000. So that's a one-time capital fiscal note. We're also imagining roughly three additional staff to be able to administer this. This is a medium-sized tax within our world. It's up to 2,000 taxpayers. It's a lot of transactions, a lot of registration, a lot of licensing. So you need a technician. We need some sort of supervisory or audit-level person. This doesn't envision a lot of enforcement activity, just being able to make sure that everything is going the way it's supposed to go. And then the third person would be an economist, someone who would do a lot of the research and outreach that would figure out how to do the weighting and the estimation of what the payments would be for purposes of conducting elections.
Okay. Madam Chair, is there a fiscal note from the Department of Revenue?
So the fiscal notes do not reflect the current version of the bill, but this is the first hearing, okay. And so
if I may, Madam Chair, yes, we what I have in front of me is a fiscal note we submitted on the version of the bill in the other body that was heard earlier this week. Because I knew that this committee had a forthcoming fiscal note that impacted revenue, but the original version really didn't, we haven't formally uploaded it yet, but it's in limbo awaiting the action of this committee to adopt, and it should be online today, the updated revenue fiscal note.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Alper. If the department does upload the fiscal note, could you please alert my committee aide, Natasha McClanahan?
Most definitely, Madam
Chair.
Thank you.
Senator Gardner?
Thank you. So the state of Alaska already has a corporate tax. Do we know or have any idea how many of the potential taxpayers under this bill are already taxpayers? The size of their business, basically.
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, I don't. My sense is not that many. Like Ms. Stevens was up here. I'm assuming her family business is not C Corporation. I know that my hotel is not. The corporate income tax is very narrowly constructed around traditional shareholder corporations. So they are paying it. It really, and that's a profits-based tax. What we have before us here is in many ways a partial sales tax. It's an industry-specific sales tax that would remit a share of gross revenue towards the industry. Those segments that participate would be taxed, obviously, at different rates. We could find out. We could estimate. We have a sector analysis within our corporate income tax. We published this report. We can get it to the committee that says how much of the corporate income tax is paid by, say, the mining industry or the forest products industry, the tourism industry. So we know the number in tourism. My instinct is a substantial percentage of that would be cruise ships, who are international corporations, who would, should they be profitable, pay Alaska's corporate income tax, and they would, as the previous testifier said, not be subject to this new assessment because of federal constitutional issues.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions of committee members? Okay, seeing none, thank you, Mr. Alper, and we will share questions if any questions do come up from members. So with that, I would like to thank the industry again for following the charge that the legislature asked of you, which is to come to us with a plan for marketing, which we all know is really important for the state's economy and the industry as a whole. This was the first hearing of the committee bill, and we will be holding it. And then if members have questions, please let us know, and we'll make sure that we are all in communication and we get answers to any questions to all the members. And with that, I'd like to thank those who are online and also those who are here today to participate in the hearing. And with that, the committee is adjourned.